7 o'clock high, recordings whirling, KY6V.
Good evening. This is the outreach program of the South Cars, which is South Coast Amateur Radio Service. Tonight we'll be presenting the technician classes. This is our third night of presenting classes. So I'm going to read the preamble in a minute, and away we will go. Stand by, please. Welcome to the outreach program sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This program has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and to further assist those wishing to obtain license status. This event will be an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for a technician class license. This course will be conducted with two sessions weekly, which will be at 7 p.m. 2300 Zulu each Tuesday and at 7 p.m. 2300 Zulu each Sunday. For those who are already licensed or wish either a refresher course or would just like to listen, please connect to SCARS, S-C-A-R-S, server at either EchoLink node number 96140 or IRLP node 9614 or All-Star, one word, All-Star node 27404, letting it drop. For those who are interested in obtaining your license for the first time, please contact Mike, KD0CDQ, via email at VOIP at SCARS VOIP, which is SCARSVOIP.com, to enroll in the class and be given directions as to the study material required and the manner you will be connected into the course. The material being presented is formatted from data obtained from the ARRL and is simply being forwarded in a presentation format by SCARS. Should anyone take issue to some of the technical statements made, and in keeping with not interrupting the class and session, please convey your comments or suggestions to the outreach program at VOIP at southcarsvoip.com. It should be mentioned that this course covers only the requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing sessions on this server, please drop us an email at VOIP at scarsvoip.com. This session this evening will be recorded and posted on our website at www.scarsvoip.com. Are there any questions before we start? Over. If I'm doing this right, I'm going to turn this over to Roger, who is W4RFJ, and he will take it from there. So it's all yours, Roger. Go with it. KD0CDQ, over to you.
KD0CDQ from W4RFJ. Before we start, I'd like to check and make sure we don't have any emergency or priority traffic so that we can continue without interruption.
Very good point, Chief. Is there any emergency or any information that has to be put forward before we go on the air? Over. Well, Roger, it sounds like you've got the stage, so take it away, please. KD0CDQ, back to you.
Thanks, Mike. Good job. This is W4RFJ, and I'd like to welcome everybody that's listening by whatever means necessary. My first question is going to be T3B03, and I'm putting that out so Mike can get it up on whatever he's putting it up on. And the question is, what are the two components of a radio wave? Well, this is a very important question because if you're going to be utilizing radio waves to communicate, it would be nice to know what they are. The two components of a radio wave, now I'm not going to read through all the other answers. What you need to know is that a radio wave consists of electric and magnetic fields. Well, let me grab a nickel. Also, it's also known as the combination of, or the radio wave is also known as an electromagnetic or EM wave. And an EM waves that are created as a result of vibrations between an electric field and a magnetic field. In other words, EM waves are composed of oscillating magnetic and electrical fields. All right, let me stand by for any questions before I read the my little description. This is W4RFJ. Would anybody got any comments? Okay, hearing none. A description of an electromagnetic waves are formed when electric field comes in contact with magnetic field. They are hence known electromagnetic waves. The electric field and magnetic field of an electromagnetic wave are always perpendicular or at right angles to each other. EM waves travel with a constant velocity of 3 times 1 milliseconds to the minus 10th to the, oh, I forget how to read that, 3.00 times 108 ms minus 1 in a vacuum, okay? They are deflected neither by the electric field nor by the magnetic field. However, they're capable of showing interference or attraction. Let me grab an electric electromagnetic wave can travel through anything, be it air, solid material, or vacuum. It does not need a medium to propagate or travel from one place to another. Mechanical waves like sound waves, water waves, on the other hand, need a medium to travel in. EM waves or electromagnetic waves are transverse waves. This means that they are measured by their amplitude or their height and wavelength, which is the distance between the highest and lowest parts of two consecutive waves. The highest point of the wave is the crest, whereas the lowest point is known as the trough. Electromagnetic waves can be split into a range of frequencies. This is known as the electromagnetic, also known as the electromagnetic spectrum. I'm sure everybody's familiar with that. Examples of EM waves are radio waves, microwaves, infrared waves, X-rays, gamma rays, etc., etc. That's about it. I think I turn it over to George, or do I ask for more check-ins? Mike, can you fix that for me?
Does anyone have any questions pertaining to that first question we've had? If we don't hear anything, we're going to tell George to pick it up where he is. It's KD0CDQ. Pick it up, 070.
Oh, thank you, Mike. I was waiting a second in case anyone did have any questions. Did hear any? This is George. My call is N070 or in phonetics, Nancy Oscar 7 Oscar, or in an order phonetic alphabet, Nancy Ocean 7 Ocean. I like the latter because I love the ocean. So anyway, my next question is Tango 3 Baker 06 T3B06. The question is, what is the formula for converting frequency to approximate wavelength in meters? Chief just talked about the wavelength being between the crest or the shallow of the waves. The answers are possible answers are A, wavelength in meters equals frequency in hertz multiplied by 300. B, wavelength in meters equals frequency in hertz divided by 300. C, wavelength in meters equals frequency in megahertz divided by 300. Or D, wavelength in meters equals 300 divided by the frequency in megahertz. So you're just looking at different numerators and denominators in the formula. The answer is D, wavelength in meters equals 300 divided by frequency in megahertz. Now, let me caution all those who are taking the course that the answers A, B, C, and D, don't memorize those because the answers are going to be in a different order on the test. So D tonight may be or may not be D on the test. Take it at the examination. Let me reset the circuits. So when you do the calculation of converting frequency to wavelength in meters, be sure that you are using the correct units. Megahertz must be used with the number 300. Otherwise, you'll be looking at the wrong answer. Now, I have a further note here. Myself, Chief just talked to him, but I want to reiterate it. A radio wave goes out like the ripples on a pond. The length between the tops of the waves or between the bottoms of the wave is the wavelength of the ripple. Now the same applies from wavelengths of the much shorter radio wave that you cannot see, but you can definitely hear the radio wave with the aid of a radio wave receiver. So that was question T3B06. My next question, I'm up for the next question also, but before I move over, let me give a chance for anyone to call with any questions about T3B06. Please call or speak up on Skype now. Over.
KE0MQQ question.
Go right ahead with your question. We are all listening. Go right ahead with your question. We're all listening to you. Over.
Thank you. This is KE0MQQ. My question I was going to ask this question earlier, but I didn't key up in time. Can an electromagnetic wave pass through lead, like an inched plate of lead? KE0MQQ, back to you.
Okay, George, would you want to pick that up before I give what I think is the right answer, but you may have more information on it. Back over to you, N-O-7-0.
Michael, I will let you and Chief pick that up since Chief introduced that topic instead of me, and I do have a thought if you need it. KD0CDQ, N-O-7-0, over.
4-R-F-J.
Okay, let me make sure I've got it. W4RFJ. One of the things that you got to keep in mind, Mark, is that a electromagnetic wave can be diffracted or reflected, I guess would be another way to explain that. So, therefore, a Faraday shield, which is capable of electrostatic and magnetic properties, will diffract or reflect, as well lead. What I was trying to convey was that you don't really need a medium for an electromagnetic wave to actually move from one point to another. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but lead to me is a very, very thick material, and the properties would be that if electromagnetic waves were to travel through it, it would definitely be a very, it would more or less, what's the word I'm looking for, slow it down, not slow it down, or maybe absorb it. That would be the way to put that. I'm not sure if NO70's got anything to add to that, but that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay, MQQ, would that be adequate for an answer for you? Over.
KD0CDQ, KE0MQQ. But I'm still... can it pass through, like all the way through? I understand that it can be absorbed and reflected, but can it pass through? Because I think it, one of you stated that an electromagnetic wave can pass through anything. So I was just curious. KE0CDQ from KE0MQQ.
Very good, MQQ. That would require a deeper look into that. I would have to look into some documentation to be sure, which I won't be able to do this evening. But we will be able to probably email you an extended answer on that, if that would be possible. Chief, do you think you could do that, go a little deeper in an email, if he would give us his address? Over.
Yeah, I'll look deeper into it. I'm pretty sure that... that electromagnetic waves will pass through lead, but because of the nature of lead, the lead would end up absorbing it before it would get all the way through, depending on the thickness of the lead. But I think it would be reflected but I got to double check that. Anyway, thanks, W4.
Six Vector.
Go ahead, Gordon. Please, you got the floor.
Yeah, I just wanted to add a couple of thoughts on that. We have to be a little more specific on what we're looking at, I think, Mark. How thick is this piece of lead, okay? How much power is being developed initially in the electromagnetic wave? If we had those two answers or something close to it, we could probably figure out a more precise approach to it, Mark. Any rate, comments on that, and then turn it to George so we can move it on, sir. KY6V, over.
This is KD0CDQ. Are there any further comments or questions before I turn it over to George? I'll be standing by.
N070, comment on his question. Well, I heard no audio, but I assume that was for me. Mark, you might also, and Nets and those attending the class, you might do a historical search, online search, for the acronym TEMPEST, all capital letters, T-E-M-P-E-S-T. Faraday's Shield was mentioned, and that will give you some more information regarding stopping of radio waves as well. End of comment. Thank you. KD0CDQ, N-070, over.
Thanks for adding that. Hopefully that will help MQQ. Maybe you can look it up and find out what he needs to know. If there's no other questions, we will continue. And I believe it's T3B08. Are you ready to go with that? Over. Ready, George?
Affirmative. Thank you, Michael. Question T3B08. The question is, what are the frequency limits of the VHF spectrum? That's the VHF spectrum. Question, answer A, possible answer, 30 to 300 kilohertz, that's kilohertz. B, 30 to 300 megahertz. C, 300 to 3,000 kilohertz. Or D, 300 to 3,000 megahertz. And the answer is the first one. VHF is between 30 and 300 megahertz. I'm sorry, that answer, correct answer is B, 30 to 300 megahertz. This range of 30 to 300 megahertz is a convention established among radio services to specify that VHF is in the frequency range of 30 to 300 megahertz. Let me reset. A way to also help you remember this as well as the others, HF has a longer wavelength, therefore a smaller frequency. So you may want to remember that the sequence is HF, then VHF, and then UHF as the frequency increases. So just by convention, VHF has been assigned the frequency range of 30 to 300 megahertz. That is just a human-established arbitrary convention, arbitrary in a way, but it's also been accepted worldwide and by the governing organizations dealing with legal and procedural matters for radio operations. So are there any questions or comments on T3B08? Please call now. Over. Nothing heard. I'll turn it back to you. Call KD0CDQ and I'll 7-0.
Okay, thank you. I'm frantically writing down the question numbers in advance as you're giving that fine answer. Okay, well, I'm going to send it over to Roger. W4RFJ, you've got the floor. Over.
Okay, Mike. Well, I thought we were friends, so you can call me Chief. The next question is T3C as in Charlie as 01. Why are direct, not via a repeater, UHF signals rarely heard from stations outside of your local coverage area? Well, the answer to that question is that UHF signals are usually not reflected by the ionosphere. The answer is C in this specific case, but keep in mind this answer will show up in different locations. The problem is, or not the problem, the fact is VHF and UHF propagation, while HF propagation pundits or experts are concerned with the ionosphere due to its reflective nature to RF electromagnetic waves below 30 megahertz. VHF and UHF enthusiasts generally have their sights set a little lower, mostly on the troposphere. Under normal or flat conditions, no clouds, no temperature inversions, or ionized gases such as the Aurora Borealis. Had to get some direction from the Admiral there. Most VHF and UHF communications are generally thought to be line of sight. In other words, if your antenna doesn't see the other antenna, they're not going to communicate. One of the best ways to look at it is the higher your antenna is, the better and easier and free you can talk. This is W4RFJ. Again, the UHF signals are usually not reflected by the ionosphere, therefore you get no ionospheric reflection. Anybody have any concerns or questions concerning this question, please call W4RFJ. Okay, I guess hearing none, I guess I'll pass it over to the Sheriff of Nottingham, W4RFJ.
This is NO70. Let me make sure I have it. I'm getting some lag here, NO70.
Yes, George, it's all yours. Over.
Thank you. All right. Well, now, for all those attending the technician class here tonight, I'd like to talk about the exceptions, the rare exceptions to what Chief just said about propagation. The question number is T3C08, Tango 3, Charlie 08. The question is, what causes tropospheric ducting? And the possible answers are A, discharges of lightning during electrical storms, B, sunspots and solar flares, C, updrafts from hurricanes and tornadoes, or D, temperature inversions in the atmosphere. And the answer to what causes tropospheric ducting is temperature inversions in the atmosphere. Once again, don't memorize the letter. They're going to change when you take the test, but the answer will not change. The answer is temperature inversions in the atmosphere. Let me reset. So when an exception occurs to what Chief just said, there are several different types of propagation. Propagation means the path a radio wave travels along as it radiates from the transmitter. Tropospheric ducting occurs when the radio wave hits the temperature inversion and follows the tunnel in the atmosphere that the inversion sets up until the radio wave reaches a point where the tunnel ends and the radio wave can return back to the ground where a receiver is located, kind of like water going off the end of a pipe. This creates the unusual effect of a radio signal that skips over receivers in between the temperature inversion tunnel points, the transmitter and the receiver in this case, and it usually results in a much stronger received signal at the endpoint than is typical of other propagation paths. These temperature inversions can create some very delightful and unexpected contacts and enjoyable radio operations. So what causes tropospheric ducting? Temperature inversions of the atmosphere. And with that, I will turn it over to Chief W4FJ for the next one. This is NO70. Over.
Okay, George, this is W4RFJ. The next question I have is T4Alpha07. And I'll read the question. How is a computer sound card used when conducting digital communications? The answer to this question, and again, I'm avoiding all the other answers to keep there from being any confusion, the sound card provides audio to the radio's microphone input and converts received audio to digital form. I'll say again. The sound card provides audio to the radio's microphone input and converts received audio to digital form. Let me pause for a second. Despite the availability of HF digital hardware, the PC sound card and the computing power and speed of the processors available to make them work over recent years has made a significant contribution to the amateur's ability to experiment and enjoy many different modes, old and new, and that's of amateur radio. Some of the older modes, such as CW, RTTY, those required special hardware. mTOR, gTOR, and PACTOR also required special computers and or hardware. But the modes of today are wrapped around compression algorithms and detection schemes that give RF noise a run for its money. Some of those are BPSK, QPSK, PACTOR-3, FT-8, and way too many more to list. Prospective hams looking to get into these fun abilities, let me warn you that there are special transmitter issues you need to be able to recognize and adjust for. So read up on it and or get your Elmer to give you some advice prior to jumping in. Okay, we'll take a pause and see if anybody has any questions concerning the computer, how the computer sound card is used when conducting digital communications. This is W4RFJ. Okay, hearing none, over to you there, Sheriff, W4RFJ.
Well, thank you, Chief. And for those of you that are just joining us or moving in and out, this is SouthCARS, the South Coast Amateur Radio Services technician class online training course that allows us to look at the most recent set of technician class license questions released back in July. And we're giving you some study points and hopefully some additional information as you consider taking your test for your technician class license. I want to welcome those who are licensed or those who are not licensed that are joining us by Skype or by podcast to study. I want to encourage you to study hard, do well, so you can thoroughly enjoy this hobby of ours. So this is the South Coast technician class license. My next question to go into the pool that Chief and I are sharing tonight is T4A010. T4A10, Tango 4A10. The question is, what is the source of a high-pitched whine that varies with engine speed in a mobile transceiver's receive audio? Now, you're going down the road in your car and you're trying to listen on your equipment and you hear this whine in your radio receiver. Let me reset the circuit. The possible answers you'll see on the test are A, the ignition system, B, the alternator, C, the electric fuel pump, or D, the anti-lock braking system controllers. And the FCC, yes, does want you to know this bit about auto mechanics. The answer is the alternator. Have you ever tried to pedal a bike with a resistance gear in the gym or with an old-school alternator rubbing against the rim of the bicycle tire or perhaps on a green energy bike that's also being used to generate electricity to be stored as an alternative energy source? You know it's hard to pedal. There is a measurably greater effort required to pedal that bike because it is setting up an electromagnetic field to convert the magnetic energy to a magnetic field into electricity. Let me reset. Now, the magnetic field is also generated by a car alternator. It sets up a field in the alternator windings, which can create a field in the car's wiring, especially if it's not properly grounded. And then that field sounds like a whine, as in a whistle, in the car's radio receiving systems. Resetting. So if you're going down the road and your radio in your car starts showing a whine, you may have a car problem coming up with a bad ground, or in this case, the alternator may need servicing before you have a breakdown on the road. So please save yourself some trouble by applying what you have learned tonight about a technician class license today and to protect your vehicle and yourself by having the alternator looked at and repaired if need be. That is a part of keeping your radio equipment in good operation as well too. If you do get your vanity plates with a ham radio license call on them, that is a requirement by most licensing organizations or authorities that you have your equipment in good operation and in the car and running. That's T4A10, T4A10, and I'll turn it back over to any questions. This is NL7F.
6, Victor, George.
Thank you, Gordon. KY6V, NL7O, over.
Yeah, I thought maybe I'd interject here, KY6V. Thank you, George. That there's a couple of things to think about here, too. Make sure that your radio system is properly grounded with a good ground when we're talking about this subject. The other thing is that push comes to shove, if you can't seem to eliminate it, there are alternator filters that are available in the market, and they're not very expensive. They go in between your alternator line and the battery itself and filters out a lot of this, and they're very, very effective. And as I said, not very expensive either. Back to you, George, KY6V. Thank you.
Thank you, Gordon. That is a very good point about the alternator filters as a solution as well, assuming that all the other wiring has been checked out and good. Thank you very much, Gordon. Thank you. KD0CDQ, NL7O, over.
Okay, we're going to send it over to W4RFJ. Chief, take it away. This is KD0CDQ.
Thanks, Mike. This is W4RFJ with question number Tango 4 Bravo 01. What may happen if a transmitter is operated with the microphone gain set to high? Well, the answer to that is the output signal might become distorted. Well, I can tell you 99.9% of the time it is going to be distorted. So what can we do to alleviate or to compensate for that? A good way to keep the spurious or distorted waves out of your transmitted signal is to utilize what we call the ALC meter that comes from the automatic limiting control circuit of your HF rig. This circuit is designed to turn down the gain of your transmitter in an effort to limit any distortion. Most amateurs agree that you should barely see that ALC meter move to ensure that the distortion is not happening. Let me grab a nickel. One of the things that I try to explain to people, and most get it, is that the watt meter does not give you any distortion indication. If you're seeing a tremendous amount of power output because of the averaging nature of your watt meter, that's probably giving you an indication you're putting out more RF energy, and it's probably very distorted and not working properly, and especially if the ALC meter is maxing out. If it is, then you are more than likely distorting your signal. Does anybody have any questions, concerns, or comments concerning this question? W4RF.
This is KD0CDQ with an observation on PSKs. We must be very cautious not to overpower, because otherwise it'll just smear when it comes across to the receiver. That's when you're sending text on a PSK-type operation. Any questions or any observations on that last questions we had from the chief? Over. Didn't hear anybody on this end, so I'm going to send it back to NO70. George, it's all yours. Over.
No, it's not.
Okay, chief's got another question. He's doubling up on us here. I'm sorry. Just brought up my screen and saw that. Go ahead, Chief.
Okay, first of all, in one of my prior questions, I mentioned that when you're using your sound card, that there is digital or there are digital modes that you need to be able to learn how to recognize and compensate for. And Mike, you're absolutely correct. Yes, you have to watch that ALC meter, and it shouldn't hardly even bounce at the bottom of the scale, and that'll tell you that you're probably putting out a very clean signal. Okay, I guess on to my next question is Tango 4 Bravo 07. What does the term RIT mean? Well, that is your receiver incremental tuning. Like I said, I'm not reading all the other questions because I don't want to get them confused. Receiver incremental tuning. Let me grab a nickel. Okay, this control, the RIT, allows you to make adjustments to what you are hearing without changing the transmit frequency of your radio. If you continually adjust the main frequency knob while you're in QSO, you and whoever you are communicating with can find each other moving up and down the band trying to keep up with each other and possibly interfering with others in the process. So if you feel the need to clarify your receiver, use the RIT and leave your transmitter right there on the same spot. That way you guys won't be playing leapfrog all over the place trying to keep up with each other. Does anybody have any questions, concerns, changes, or deletions? Please call W4RF.
NO70 comment.
Go ahead, Joe.
Well, thank you, Chief. You know, we've been talking about the different measurements and meters and audio levels and good operating level, good amateur, and good radio practice with these different levels. And let me just say to all the class members, imagine this feeling of confidence, self-assurance, and feeling of knowledge and capability that you will have as you are using your transmitters and receivers or transceivers, your equipment, to make radio contacts. Now, if all of these meters and watching them and so forth scares you a lot, keep in mind that you're not on your own. If you want to have anyone to help you, your first time on the air, that ham radio operators love to help people out who especially are doing their first time on the air. They'll be very patient with you on both ends, the transmit and the receive end. And that's why they're called Elmers, because Elmers are really nice, approachable, nice people. So that's how you also can learn how to read all the meters. That's my comment, and back to you, Chief W4FJ, NO70.
Well, you forgot to mention, unless you consider me your Elmer, that I'm the meanest guy in town. I'm going to turn it over to Mike and let him do his whatever his magic is.
Okay, the next question is brought to us by the Chief, if I'm looking at this printout correctly. So why don't you give us the number, Chief, and we will look at that question. Over.
Nope, George's turn. Turn it over to the sheriff.
They go NO70KD0CDQ. It's your turn on this next question. Over.
Thank you, Michael. And, hey, disclaimer, I'm not a sheriff of anything. That's just my chief has a title, chief, somehow, because I wind up living in Nottingham, which has Nottingham Forest. That's how I inherited the fictitious title of sheriff. You do not want to be thanking anyway. Speaking of Elmers, check out the South Coast website. Chief says he's mean. But you look at the Elmer paragraph on the South Coast website, you'll see on that. All right, let's get back to business now that we've given you a coffee break. My next question is Tango 4 Baker 10, T4B10, a better reset. The question is, which of the following is an appropriate receive filter bandwidth for minimizing noise and interference for CW or Morse code reception? Now, we were talking about minimizing noise and interference earlier. If you're going to be listening to Morse code, which is the appropriate receive filter bandwidth? 500 hertz, 1,000 hertz, 2,400 hertz, or 5,000 hertz? Let me reset. The correct answer is 500 hertz. A bandwidth filter limits the width of the frequency spectrum that you are hearing on a receiver and has other applications for other equipment. As you listen to a wide bandwidth, there will be many more radio signals heard all at the same time. Now, the bigger the bucket, the more you catch, and if you don't want to catch too much, you need to make the bucket smaller, meaning a narrower bandwidth. If you have too wide a bandwidth, it makes it hard to hear the one signal you are interested in. To reduce the number of signals you are hearing, reduce the receive filter bandwidth. However, if you reduce it too much, you will not hear the full frequency range of the CW or Morse code signal. Therefore, a good setting is to listen for a change in audio tone and have your receive filter bandwidth set at 500 hertz. Are there any questions or comments? And I don't know.
Six vectors, sir.
Thank you, Gordon. KY6V, and I'll 7-0 over.
Thank you, George. KY6V. I think it's important to take this maybe just a little further since we're dealing with folks that are just getting into the hobby. This question is absolutely correct as stated. But one should also know that the CW bandwidth, the signal that is produced in a CW mode is quite narrow, as opposed to a speech bandwidth, such as single sideband. And that gets up to around 2400 to 3K. So you have to think, when you're picking a filter, what mode are you talking about, okay? And you have to realize the different bandwidths of the different modes. So you would pick a 500 filter for CW, and that's absolutely correct, but you would pick probably a 2400 KC filter for or 2400 filter for single sideband. And on the story goes, George, KY6V, back to you.
Thank you, Gordon. An excellent point about audio taking a wider bandwidth than CW. And also, for those that are getting your first class, you heard Gordon mention KC for kilocycle, and we'll be talking about also hertz and kilohertz. So a cycle is just a cycle up and down. A cycle per second, though, meaning that you got the cycle all in 1 second, is 1 hertz. And what's happened is that over time, people used to say kilocycle all the time, but it became standardized later to be kilohertz because of the time dimension of the measurement. So you'll hear kilocycle and kilohertz, or megacycle and megahertz, used very interchangeably this day and age. All right, end of my comments there. KDC or CDQ for next question, NO70, over.
Six vector for a quickie.
Good. More information, KY6B, NO70.
Well, I just have to tell you guys and gals a funny story. You know, my father was an old-time ham. He started hamming in 1921 with spark gap and so on and so forth. Well, he grew up when everything was a cycle, and a kilocycle, and a megacycle, and so on and so forth. And when they finally changed that, after years of using cycles, they changed it to the word hertz. And his saying was simply this, it hurt. Go ahead, George, KY6V, over.
Yes, change definitely hurts. Oh, my goodness. Yes, well, puns also come along with ham radio for everyone listening. And we hope you have fun with the hobby as you get your license. KD0CDQ, I got myself in trouble again. Help me out, please. NO70, over.
Yeah, quite a right. I'm still smiling from the joke that Gordon put over on it. That kind of slipped right in there, did it not? Okay. If I've got it right, I think we're going back over to the chief on this next one. Go right ahead, chief. You got it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, hams do it until it hurts, but that was my own version of that. Let's see, the next question is T5 or Tango 5 Alpha 09. What is the name for a current that reverses direction on a regular basis? Well, the only type of current that I know of that reverses direction on a regular basis is what we call alternating current. Circular current doesn't do it. Direct and vertical currents don't do it, but alternating current. Alternating current can be visualized with a chart showing voltage on a vertical plane and time on a horizontal plane. If you guys have had a chance to look at the AC or alternating current picture I refer to as figure 1, you can see that the voltage is on the left, the vertical, and you can see how the voltage reverses along that common or zero or ground reference. If you were to measure the length of time for one complete cycle, and a complete cycle would be going from zero up, then to zero, then down, and back to zero. That's one full cycle. So the length of time that you went one full cycle could be converted to frequency by finding its, oh gosh, I know the 1 over time, which is the, oh shoot, I didn't write it down. Anyway, and if you have the frequency, you can figure out the time by doing 1 over frequency. Okay, anybody got any feedback or any questions on alternating current?
NO70 comment.
All right, Sheriff, but keep that squirrel at bay.
Yeah, well, he's got two six-shooters, one on each of his little squirrel hips, so I better make this a fast transmission. Regarding alternating and direct current, keep in mind that when you put your radio equipment in the car, you're dealing with direct current. When you plug it into your house current, you're dealing with alternating current. And for a discussion and historical perspective on this, look up Tesla and Edison and how the debate went on about which was better to sell and distribute electricity with, especially in the city of New York. Very interesting history, and it will give you a lot of appreciation about cycles, waves, and current. W4HA, back to you, Chief, in our seminar.
Well, if you guys have ever heard of that, that's called the Battle of the Currents. And Tesla basically proved that you could send alternating current over longer distances with a lot less attenuation and so forth. Another place you can find alternating current is in the antennas or the transmitted energy that we send out. It's just a different frequency or wavelength. Okay, so if you take the power coming out of the bulkhead or the wall, that's at 60 hertz or 60 cycles per second. And if you look at, let's say, an 80-meter signal, you're looking at somewhere between 3.5 megahertz and 4 megahertz. So that's another place that we deal with alternating current, also known as RF energy. Okay, that's it for me. I'm going to pass it back over to Super Mike there. And wait a minute. Is there any other questions or comments on alternating current?
Chief, my understanding is that you have a graph posted on the website to help them also understand that a picture being a worth a thousand words. W4FJ and O7O.
Yeah, but Paul wouldn't be able to recognize it unless he's had enough coffee. All right, I'm going to pass it back over to Mike, W4RFJ, back to KD0CDQ, is that right? Okay, I guess Mike's not available, so George, I'll pass it back to you with the last question of the evening.
Thank you, Chief, very good. And Chief is correct, this is the last question for this evening. Next class will be this coming Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The last question for tonight is Tango 4 Alpha 14 T5A14. In which type of circuit is voltage the same when measured across all components? Would that be a series, a parallel, resonant, or branch circuit? And the answer to which has the voltage the same across all components is a parallel circuit. Now, that doesn't make much sense. Let me try to help explain that a little bit, resetting. So, class, if you would, imagine a lake with two parallel rivers located at the outlet of the lake water flow. One river is much larger than the other. The lake, however, is located where a dam is put in place, DAM, and the lake is maintained by the water flow control device by that dam at a constant depth of 2,000 feet deep. So the water pressure or push of the 2,000 feet of water will be the same at the mouth of both rivers. However, because the rivers are of different sizes, one river will carry more water than the other. Let me reset. Now, voltage is defined as the potential energy or push of electron flow. The amount of flow is the current. So the water pressure at the head of the two rivers located next to each other in parallel is the same, the pressure set up by the lake being 2,000 feet deep. However, as that voltage or water flow pressure pushes, then while the pressure or voltage is the same across the mouths of both rivers, the amount of water that flows through the two rivers or the current will be different in a parallel circuit. Now, looking ahead or to other questions, if you're dealing with a series circuit, this gets reversed, and we're not going to go into that question tonight, but it is in the question pool. So the answer to in which type of circuit is voltage the same across all components, that would be a parallel circuit because you have the two rivers located at the same point and the push is the same at the head or the mouth of both rivers that are taking the flow from the lake. Are there any questions about voltage and parallel circuits? Please call in 070. Over.
Comment.
Oh, very good. I want to introduce you to Fred K2HA, who is our RAGCU Meister, who has given up his RAGCU time tonight for us to have this class. Very nice of you, Fred. Thank you, and thank you for your comment, K2HA, and 070. Over.
Okay, sometime this next week I'm going to start putting the electrical circuit into the ham shack, and I'm going to bring the wire from the entrance panel, and I'm going to wire each of the outlets in parallel so that the voltage will be the same at each one. And if you put too many outlets in there and you plug enough stuff in there, it will drop as you go along the line. Therefore, in electrical code, the International Electrical Code, you are limited to 8 outlets, boxes, along the line before you have to put another circuit in. Okay, this is Fred, K2HA.
Well, thank you, Fred. And I'd like to add that the circuits, when you put another circuit breaker in, all of the outlets that are wired in parallel across that, those outlets are wired in series with the circuit breaker so that when that circuit breaker is turned off or trips, then no current flows because the breaker is in series with all of the outlets. But then the outlets themselves are wired in parallel and not in series with each other. Otherwise, you want to be able to work with but one outlet at a time. So that gets into series circuits and a very good observation and point, Fred. Are there any other questions or comments about parallel circuits and voltage? Please call now, NO70.
Uno mas.
Oh, please, Fred, go ahead. K2HA, NO70.
Yeah, thinking about wiring, the interesting thing about house wiring and the wiring that we have usually inside of a ham radio is that the black is hot in the house, and the black in ham radio is normally ground, and the white is hot. So it's just reversed. K Okay, this is Fred, K2HA.
Thank you, Fred. And class, when you start installing your radio equipment in your house, you do want to consider how much power that you'll be running, maybe not with your technician class license, but in the long term, so that if you do advance in the hobby and get a higher class license, that you have adequate wiring in the house to be able to use things like linear amplifiers and higher wattage, higher power equipment. Let me also, now that's the end of the question T5A14. Please, class, let me mention that for Tuesday night, we'll be getting into Ohm's law, which deals with the calculation of voltage and current. And I would recommend for homework that you look at the South Cars website and look at the Ohm's law wheel. If you don't understand it, then don't worry, wait for the class. But if you can follow along a little bit with it, and you're not comfortable with algebra, the wheel is an alternative to help you do the calculations. So your homework assignment from me, for my part next week about Ohm's law, is to take a look at the South Cars website. All right, let me turn it back to our nice host station tonight, KD0CDQ, and thank you so much for being there to help us out, Michael. NO70, over.
Okay, Mike said he lost audio in the text box. Let me double check. W4RFJ to KD0CDQ. You there, Mike? Hearing none. Captain, are you available to do the closing?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Thank you very much, Chief, and thank you, George. Guys and gals, with the completion of the third class, which was tonight, you are at 37.5% completion of the course. There's 8 classes in total, and each class represents about 12.5%. So by the time you roll up and we're finished with the Tuesday night, you will be halfway through the course, 50%. Again, I would recommend that the questions that are being given to you from the instructors are those that they feel are the most germane, the most important, and mean the most, possibly, of the total questions that are presented for each class. Now, if you look at the information for the class, you'll find that you're given 50 to 60 questions per class to look through, and we recommend very highly that you review through that so that any questions on your part can be parleyed by us either by email or here on the class. Let me buy a nickel. So with that, thank you, everybody. We'll have the recording posted and on the website sometime in the morning, and we'll take it for there. At this point, we're going to close the technician class number 3 here for this evening, return the server back to normal use, and fun and folly. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. KY6V, and we're now clear.